Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up 500,000 in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, broker here at Daniels Trading, which is now part of StoneX. If you're a client here and you like what we're talking about, feel free to give me a call or shoot me a text on any of our ideas. If you're not a client here and interested in working with us, let me know. Work with a lot of grains traders, producers, hedgers, anything in the futures and options markets. Online, a great online platform, and also work with plenty of clients, broker assisted and hybrid, which is a mix of both. If you like the podcast, please go on to iTunes and give us a review or pass it along to someone who might like it. If you want to check out my newsletter, Turner's Take, you can just go to turnerstake.com and register for it there. Or you can text number 33777-3777 with the message Turner, follow the instructions, and you can check it out that way too. So let's get into it here. I've had the WASDE report came out on Friday. Things were pretty busy towards the end of the week. We had been buying really calls and puts ahead of the report, you know, short-dated ones, not really knowing how the market was going to react to it. I'm glad we did. Even the short-dated puts to the downside that we had lost a little bit of value, not a ton, but the short-dated calls that we had to the upside, especially for soybeans, for those who are interested in that, those seem to be working out. So let's talk about, had some chance here to read some of the other analysts' interpretations of the WASDE. I got to read it over again. WASDE report's always tough to cover right when it comes out because it's 11 a.m. Central. The market closes at 1:15, and everyone's trading the headlines. You really don't have a good chance to get into the report to see what it says and analyze it till after the market closes. It makes a Friday report very interesting that way because basically you get an hour and a half, 2 hours to trade it. And then we break for the weekend, and then we open up with Asia on Sunday night. Europe comes in around midnight, 1 a.m., and then the United States is back trading the report around 8, 9 a.m. So Sunday night should be an interesting one to see how the rest of the world reacts to this WASDE report. We'll go corn first, then soybeans. For the corn market, depending who you talk to, I've heard people say this report was neutral to bearish. I've seen analysts consider it neutral to bullish. A lot of different interpretations about what's going on with the WASDE. So let's dive into that. First of all, acres kept at 92 million acres. There was no reduction in acres. They've been talking about from the certified acres from last time around, if acres would come down, that really didn't happen. It looked like the certified acres issue, really just a timing and a delay at the USDA offices to get acreage certification in, and that's why it was perceived to be a little low. What did come down a little bit was harvested acres. So harvested acres came down, and that reflects the damage in Iowa. Yields were brought down for corn to 178.5. That was around where the market was looking for, and what ended up happening when the USDA made slight changes to ethanol and exports, feed and residual. At the end of the day, their ending stocks are 2.5 billion. Now, 2.5 billion ending stocks and stocks usage to 17.1. Face value is not bullish. It's actually kind of bearish. But that is not what the market's really trading right now. The market is also, in addition to just that number, where it's going to be. Like, are we going to have more demand coming into the market in the future from China? Probably. They're having corn issues, and while their harvest is right around the corner, you know, China can't afford to be short on grain. When it comes to, this is something we talk about a lot with the Middle East and wheat. If there's ever food shortages in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe, that Western Asia, a part of the old Soviet Union, you get, and Africa too, you get huge civil unrest, especially with nations where the governments, there's basically this either socialist or dictatorship relationship where the government is feeding the people. So with China, they can't ever afford to run out of food or even come close to it. So they have these huge stockpiles, and they're going to have to keep those stockpiles intact. So even if China does have just a ton of corn on hand, and they do, they are going to import it. Plus, if they're going to want to comply with phase one, they're going to have to take delivery. And there's plenty of corn to take delivery of on the balance sheets. From China's point of view, they don't know who's going to be the next president, right? And you take a look at the polls and the odds here, and how well we did predicting the last election. There's probably zero confidence in any kind of anyone who's trying to predict who's going to win this election. No one's going to bet their life on it, right? So in China's mind, they've got to really straddle that line, and they'll probably try to buy as much, as least as they can, that's available for phase one. Relations aren't good with the current administration in China, and I think the last thing China wants is A, to have the tariffs and the trade war come back. They don't want that. That hurt them severely economically, and that doesn't get enough play in the financial press. And two, they now actually do need the grain, right? So there's that double whammy, and they have no idea, along with everyone else, what's going to happen in November. So there is this bullish undertone to the grain market. Also, some people think that now that we had all that damage to the crop in August, the crop is going to get smaller as we go. When we had the great conditions up until July, you have the saying, big crops get bigger. You get this very strange unseasonal drought for the grain markets, for development, and we now start to see this crop getting smaller. And while the USDA has it at 178.5, I have scenarios in my supply and demand table which shows what's a 176.5 look like. And if for whatever reason, if the USDA is wrong and we're all wrong and we're at a 180, I have that in my supply and demand table too. The thing is, if let's say we are at a 176.5, which would be 2 bushels lower than where the USDA has us. Let's say we really do go down there. We're still at an ending stocks in my book, about 2.2 or 2.3 billion. Let's call it like 2.3 billion. I don't think ethanol is gonna get stronger. We're already, we're seeing the stock market kind of top out, at least in the short term here. We're seeing economic activity kind of top out. Like, there's only so much economic activity we can grow from the bottom of COVID without these restrictions being phased off. When I mean the restrictions, in Illinois, for example, we're still not going into Chicago. All that industry is pretty much all working from home. There's still a lot of restrictions. I live in the suburbs, but there's still restrictions out here. Like, no one's, depending on what town you live, you're not going to school or physically going to school. You're doing it online. There's still restrictions with the service industry and things like that. You're not seeing as much travel. There are certain states, I know from Illinois, there are certain states that if I travel to in the United States, I'm going to have to quarantine myself for 2 weeks. So my wedding anniversary is coming up, and I had some plans with my wife to go away for a long weekend and have someone watch the kids. And the state we were going to has quarantine. Says, once you get here, you got to quarantine for 2 weeks. So, that's not going to happen, right? Make new plans. But, it's those kind of things that are going to keep a damper, on. And it's not just happening here, it's happening around the rest of the world. So that will keep a damper, most likely, on just the huge growth in technology. I think we've seen a big growth in, I mean, in the economy. We've seen big growth in tech, but we can only push that so long so far without the rest of the economy kind of falling along. So with that in mind, there's going to be only so much demand for ethanol and energy. And we can already see the diesel market and the heating oil really having issues. The feed numbers are around the same. USDA will tinker with them about 50 to 100 million bushels on the feed and residual side. The big thing is going to be the exports, and the exports are coming up, and we think they're going to continue to come up. Now, how much is are we going to add on to exports here? We're already at 2.3 billion. You know, last year we were at 1.7 billion on corn, and you know that had to do with tariffs, and that had to do with just a huge South American crop, and a lot of other things. But we just had very low export in South America and also Ukraine. So now Ukraine's having some production issues. South America is going to sell out of their corn for the not completely sell up, but they'll sell a lot of it, and they're going to grow a lot too. So what is that going to mean for exports? I mean, if we're going to be at a 2.3 billion carryout, I mean, how high can U.S. exports really go? Can we go to 2.5 billion, 2.6 billion? I mean, those are big numbers for U.S. exports of corn. I'm going to take a look back at WASDE's past. Let's just see over the years how big. In 2017-18, exports were almost 2.5 billion. That was a big year. You know, and if I'm going back to, that was probably the biggest year we had. You know, that 2018-19 year, you know, for exports. Oh, you know, 2007-2008 was big too, 2.5. So we've never really been above that 2.5 billion carryout. So if we were going to get there again, which would be not carryout, exports, you know, if we get back to 2.5 billion, which was kind of our record. Back in the day, you know, that's only about 200 million bushels more. So we would have to really go past that 2.5, you know, about 200 million bushels more on exports. And we still have ending stocks at that point at 2 billion. Now, there's also money, fresh money coming into the market. You know, there's one thing, you know, we always follow the markets fundamentally from supply and demand perspective. But if the commodity market becomes hot among outside money, the big money flow money that we saw after, you know, when money was buying commodities at, you know, after the Great Recession and the basically all the QE. And we also saw it during, you know, 2007, 8, and 9 when we had the shortages in the corn and soybeans back then from the ethanol mandates. So there can be amplifiers in the market, and that would be the money flow. And we are seeing some money flow come in. This inflation story, which we saw with the metals first, and then money trying to chase high growth stocks, money going into the copper market, money's going into silver and gold, and there is not going into energy. I'll say energy is a commodity, and it's not going into energy right now. And for some, there is an argument to me that maybe it's coming into the grain markets. It could go into corn, but the funds usually come into soybeans now. I mean, it seems to me that the market of choice for many funds, especially if it has to do with inflation, is soybeans first, corn second. And that, unless there's a really good story for corn over soybeans. And I think it's going to, and we're going to switch real quick in a minute here to soybeans. I'm going to tell you why I think the higher potential market, the money flow market, is going to most likely be the soybean market. But just to recap my thoughts on corn here, where do we go? We could go to 380, and it would be a combination of just the crop getting smaller, big Chinese buys, China's having issues with corn, maybe the Ukraine crop isn't as great, you start worrying about dryness in South America. We haven't had a top yet. We are technically going higher. You take a look at the charts, you really can't fight the action in the chart, and I'll put the charts in my newsletter and the podcast show notes. We're at 369, 370. In Dease corn right now, 369.5, looks like we last traded on Friday. 376 is the next resistance level. After that, it's 388. Then you gotta go all the way up to 404 to get to the highs of, in December corn anyways. And that's not even continuous corn. That's December corn back, you know, with all that carry built in. But we've got, I'd say 376, 375, and then probably 388, you know, 385. In that area are the two big resistance levels. It's really hard to argue to go a whole lot higher than that unless South America gets really dry. You can have us go higher. You can have the money flow come in. We have not had a top yet. You can still have Johnny come latelys into the market pushing this higher. as the, you know, as the momentum wanes. But we're probably, it's going to be more bullish until it turns around here for corn. And also, corn will also be carried by the soybean market to some extent if soybeans continue to go higher. So keep that in mind too. All right, sorry about that. Had just a quick second of technical difficulty. Let's switch on over to soybeans. So, two more seconds on corn here. I do think we can go higher if you're short or you have sales, you want to do some buybacks, or you're just looking for any kind of play. There could be another 5, 10, 15 cents of upside in corn here. I do think it makes sense to maybe look at into some farther out corn calls, like in March or something like that, or call spreads in case South America gets dry. Because if South America gets really dry, that's when corn can go to $4. But we're not going to do it probably now with just money flow and the current situation in the United States and some Chinese buying. To really get up to like the $4 level, we would need some serious weather issues in South America, which could happen this year because of La Nina. We do have a La Nina threat, and La Nina is typically dry for Argentina and can cause parts of Brazil some problems too. And if the money's coming in, you know, that could be an issue. So I kind of like courage calls or courage call spreads with the corn market. If you have any questions about that, probably look into March. We'd be using the March contract because that would be good for the South American weather, right? From, you know, November through February, you know, in South America. So I like that. And we can, if you have any questions about that, we'll go over some examples. Let me know. So let's get over to soybeans. I'm already on 15 minutes here. I didn't think I'd be talking 15 minutes about corn. Let's go to what I think is probably the bigger of the issues here is soybeans. So you take a look at soybeans and we've got planted acres are about 83, almost 84 million acres, harvested acres stayed at 83. They did change the yields to 51.9. That's still a big soybean crop and they could come down more. I think some people between the frost up north in the Dakotas and the crop may be getting a little bit smaller, just because we are now reducing in the August that we had. There is some thought that the soybean crop could even be, let's say, 50.9. So I have my tables and I'll post these. I have my 51.9, which the USDA said. I've got a 50.9, having it come down another bushel. I also got a 52.9 just in case, because sometimes you never know with technology and, you know, the seeds, just the seed technology for soybeans has seemed to caught up in a big way with corn. I'm sure there's still damage out there, but I always like to have some kind of a, you know, a little bit of a surprise that way too, because, you know, some years you can really be surprised on how well some of these crops did. So I always like to see that number. Ending stocks for old crop and for soybeans came down to 575. So that was a little bit of a bullish surprise, at least in my mind. We also saw the, you know, the crush steady exports are thought to be coming up. With the reduction in the yield, ending stocks were about 450. That, you know, puts a stock to use at 10%. The USDA also increased the average price to 925 for futures price, so they raised that 90 cents. So the USDA thinks this rally is here to stay. I think it's here to stay too. So here's the thing with soybeans, and we went back and we just took a look at where's the state of the market, where are we going forward, how is demand, can we have shortages, is there a new reality for soybeans? That's what we basically asked ourselves. Like, is there a new huge paradigm shift for the soybean market to view it as? And if you consider it this way, if phase one is really kicking in and China's going to be buying their soybeans from the United States now, or and it seems like they are. They're buying a lot of soybeans from the United States, and we're getting that demand back because China doesn't want to run into tariffs. Then you can make the case, you know, soybeans should go back to the environment we had before the tariffs. And if you look at where soybeans were before the tariffs, we were pretty much above $10 across the board. I'll put that chart up there. If that's what we're working off of, then you take a look at the 400 million carryout, and let's say soybeans do come down another bushel on the yield. Running stocks are in the 300s. Stocks usage are at 8 or 9%. Soybeans in that point, pretty much all the contracts are in that low 10s to high 9s area, you know, where maybe the old crop months, or as we switch to November, you know, the 2020 crop into 21 crop months are all above 10, and the 21, maybe that hangs out, you know, right around 10 bucks, and the soybean market's actually inverted. That's where it's inverted, you know, over crop years. That's a possibility if South America is going to plant a ton of soybeans this year, probably, you know, record number of soybeans. But if it's hot and dry and they have production issues, we're going to have to price ration soybeans. So if the demand for, that's another question too. Take a look at demand for soybeans in the United States. We're projected to be 2.125 billion in demand exports for soybeans. If we go back, let's go back the years. You know, we had in 2017-18, we were about 2.1, 2.2 billion. Was that the high? Bear with me for a second. I have these huge spreadsheets. Yeah, that was pretty much the high. So going back, the high of the pre-tariff with China was about where we are right now. So the USDA has us forecasted for exports at about 2.125 on the exports. And I guess, and it could go higher, but if we look back to where we were at the heights of our exports, and that's when we had all the Chinese business, it was before the tariff and the trade war and the super crops in South America, we were about 2.1 billion. And that's where we're projected to be now. So anything above and beyond in the export gains on the balance sheet is going to be new demand. And we could get new demand. I'll say something else too. Not only did we have those highs were done before the tariff wars. It was also done before the great swine flu in China. Remember that? I mean, that almost seems like an afterthought now. The whole the swine flu that happened in China that decreased soybean meal demand. And it seems like that's been taken care of too. So let's say, you know, the exports can be as high as 2.2 billion. Maybe the crush can get to 2.2 billion also. If endings, you know, that could, I mean, the most bullishness I can think of right now is with a crop at 50.9, ending stocks are closer to 300 million. I heard one of an analyst out there said, you know, and when you're in the 300 million area, 350, 325, 375, you're not tight, but you're snug, which means if you get any more additional issues somewhere else around the world, we can have a problem on our hands. And that's what could happen with soybeans. So when I look at my soybean table, not only do we have to, so we deserve to be in the high nines and low tens right now, maybe even to the mid tens. If demand keeps up and this crop gets smaller and the money comes into, always remember that too. The funds are buying soybeans. They like buying soybeans. And here's the big reason why they like beans over corn. If we have a production failure, right, in soybeans, we are pretty much SOS. We are just up the creek, no paddle, because we only produce soybeans for export in two regions of the world. We do it in South America, where they produce about, I want to say, 5.5 to 6 billion bushels of beans down there. And then here in the United States, we produce 4 billion to 4.5 billion. And between Argentina, Brazil, and the United States, I want to say it's like 10 to 11 billion. And then the other production that gets scattered around South America and North America, there's some different production in Canada. But for the most part, it's those three major countries. And they produce, I mean, almost all of the exporting soybeans. And it's that market. While there's soybeans produced around the world, as far as exports go, those are the three. And if you get a huge issue where we have snug crop, you know, adequate to snug ending stocks, you get a production issue, you need extreme price rationing. Because with wheat, which is the other side of the spectrum, we produce wheat in the world for exports all over the world for the export market for wheat. It's in North America. I mean, if you look, it's the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, the Eastern and the Western. It's in the United States, it's down in South America. There is wheat in Australia, there is wheat in Russia and Europe. I mean, if you look at the world, in quadrants, hemispheres, north, south, east, west, there's always wheat being produced. So you're always, whether it's winter wheat or spring wheat, a couple of months from the next harvest every so often. Corn's kind of in the middle with South America and Europe and the Black Sea and the United States. But soybeans, it's really just two regions, and the market knows that, which means it's a very inelastic. It can be very inelastic. There's also on the protein levels too. So always keep that in mind. Soybeans, there's not a good protein substitute for soybean on that either. So it's gonna be very interesting. And if I'm the funds and I'm, piling in, I've got, unlimited resources and I'm piling into something, I'd be looking at beans. If there is a South American weather issue, a big one, we could be beans in the teens. So if I'm a producer, I'm starting to look at far out calls. I mean, I can see taking flyers on $11 and $12 calls just to sell into if we get up there. And again, it's going to be a combination of this U.S. crop gets smaller, the Chinese demand, but also if there's a huge South American weather rally. And if it wasn't a La Nina year, I'd say don't, maybe that's unrealistic, but it looks like we are going to have a La Nina year. And that means dry Argentina. There will be parts of Brazil that will be dry. There'll be parts of Brazil that gets more than normal precipitation too, but it tends to have a bigger effect on the drier parts than it does on the beneficial parts. And I think if you look past that, the data for the past 15, 20 years, the La Nina has brought down the yield prospects in South America. So and that could also help corn stay elevated. So if beans are $11 and we're at a 2.7, say we're at 2.7 price to ratio, $11 divided by 2.7, that puts corn at $4. If soybeans are 10.50 divided by 2.7, corn should be about 3.80, 3.90. So I can see that. I can see soybeans going to 10.50, which would drag corn along with it to 3.80. Let's call it that. And then if corn really went up, I mean, if soybeans really went up, I mean, at a 3-to-1 price ratio, if things got 3-to-1, which would be extreme, you can say corn, soybeans are 12 and corn's at 4, right? Yeah, I can see that happening too. Again, this would be based on South American weather because there's not a huge shortage or potential shortage of corn anytime soon. We have more regions in the world that produce it, and really Ukraine is the biggest, when it comes to corn and soybeans, it's Ukraine and their corn production that smooths out the production issues in the United States and South America, if there are one, because there's a third major exporter, in there, which we don't have for beans. So beans can be a lot more sensitive to that. Also, the whole protein thing. So that's where we are. I don't see the point in having to hedge a whole lot of beans here. We were pretty heavy on our sales from this new crop and 10% sold for the next crop. I think what we're going to end up doing is buying some calls here and farther out, like $11 and $12 calls. And if we do get this South American weather rally because of La Nina, we'll be selling into that. On a spec side, I like this old new crop red spreads like March 1st, November. We've been buying that. I would even, or whatever, no versus no of Jan versus no of March versus no of, I think those are going to work. If I'm a producer or you like some, take a flyer on options. I'd start taking a look at the out of the monies from March on. Again, you never know what's going to happen, but between the money flow, China, La Nina, this crop's getting started. I mean, the stock's coming down, and the fact that are we now in is soybeans now in a different reality where we are now back to pre-swine flu in China, pre-trade war type demand, and should the market start to be trading that way? And if it does, then beans are in the nines and tens to stay and rallying to the teens when the world gets short. That on beans, short on the stocks. That's the way it is, and that also allows corn to be in the mid threes to low fours. Right? Unless there's a shortage again. So that's is So it's a real interesting shift in market psychology and where we are with supply and demand. I think my ranges, I'm going to put my ranges for soybeans this year are going to go back before 2018, 19. It was soybeans 8 to 12 bucks. I think we're almost in that category again, where soybeans can be 8 to 12 bucks. On years where we're going to be short and we have issues, we can reach those summer highs of 11s, maybe touch 12. On years where South America and the United States have great crops, we're in the low 8s. And you've got the summer rallies and the weather premium all and we spend most of our time between $9 and $10.50. That's how it used to be before swine flu, before tariff war. And it looks like we're getting back in there, at least for soybeans. So wow, 30 minutes, that's a wrap. But honestly, I think after that WASDE report, how things have changed, how much time we spent this weekend really combing over things. I don't know, maybe the podcast was worth 30 minutes considering how much time we put into the analysis since Friday afternoon. But that's where it is. If you are a client here and you want to talk about this, change marketing plans, buy back some sales, let me know. We will look into that. I don't think this thing is over, especially not for soybeans. On the spec side, I do think wheat is gonna, I didn't talk much about wheat. I didn't think wheat was a big deal. I think that we could actually be a loser here against soybeans and corn. And from the spec side, corn versus wheat, long corn, short wheat looks very interesting. With your spec trader, you want to follow something like that, or some of the ideas in the markets, or your client and the on the hedge side. And quite honestly, most people do a little both. Let's talk. I'll put some ideas out in the podcast and the newsletter. But a lot of times things just get custom for clients and what they want to do and how they want to go about it, whether it be straight futures, future spreads, options, or option spreads. And my number here is 312-706-7610. If you like the podcast, give us a review and pass it along. If you want to check out the newsletter and don't get it already, just text number 33777 with the message Turner. You can also go to turnerstake.com and check that out. Have a great week. I'll be around all week, and we'll see how we open up on Sunday night. That should be interesting, and I'll talk to you all soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.